I am joined by a hero for many of European golf, a major winner, Graham McDowell. GMAC, Graham, what would you prefer?
Whatever.
As long as it's polite.
No. You can call me anything you want.
But thank you for giving me your time today.
Always.
To give heads up, people, where are we? We're at Jeddah. It is the media day. It is Wednesday. The weather is stunning.
Yeah, I mean, listen, always fun to come back here. I won here in 2020, back when it was a European Tour co-sanctioned event.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's probably about my eighth or ninth time here back at this golf course. It's a very good golf course.
Isn't it just?
Liv has come here, I guess, the last couple of years. We came here in like October, and it's right after the summer, and it's super hot and muggy and actually, you know, really pretty nasty come from a heat point of view. So this time of the year is a bit more pleasant.
It's lovely. This is perfect golf weather.
25, 30, golf course is in great shape. Always blows here, always blows off the Red Sea, kind of west, northwest. It's always the same golf course we come back to, but it's a good test of golf. I really like this venue and looking forward to a good weekend, hopefully.
I hit a few on 16 yesterday. I was lucky enough to go in and that wind.
Yeah, 16's a great hole.
For me, it's probably iconic is a difficult word because you've got to have the history in some ways to be iconic, but just for true beauty,
yeah,
it's got to be in the top 10 most beautiful holes in golf.
It really is. I mean, the Red Sea's stunning here. I haven't had a chance to go scuba or snorkeling out there. I've heard it's pretty amazing. But, it's an interesting golf course because it only really touches the Red Sea kind of on 16. You play 15 goes out there, 16 right on the Red Sea, and then 17 you head back in
again.
You really don't see the... You know, it's obviously been designed for property and hotels, which, you know, hopefully will eventually come here. But it's a great track. I really like it here. Like I say, a little biased. I won here in 2020. I like it a lot. And, 16 is a really beautiful hole.
And I think on the course, and I could do a 40-hour podcast on the course here, but the conditioning. You've played all around the world. You've won. You played at Pebble. I don't remember. Do you remember playing at Pebble?
I remember.
Yeah. So you played all around the world and played conditioning. Great condition course. I think this is possibly arguably top couple conditioned courses in the world.
For sure. And again, this time of the year, I think it's easier for them to get it in world-class condition after a hot desert kind of Saudi Arabian summer, with water obviously being on high demand and very expensive, in this part of the world. This time of the year, it's always in amazing shape. And, the golf course kind of changes over the years since I've seen it. A lot of the runoff areas, like on right of 9, left of 18, left of 16. Sometimes they leave a color rough. Sometimes they shave it down.
Not on 18 at the minute.
No,
there is nothing.
This week they've got it. Everything is running off into the water. Makes these playing surfaces play much smaller, makes the second shot to 18 play much more difficult.
That bunker right on 18.
Mm-hmm.
On the second one, that looks to be horrific. If you end up in there and you don't make a treble, you've done...
Yeah, yeah. No, 18's a fantastic finishing hole here. And I mean, obviously, Brooks has won twice here, won on a playoff. I think he may have won on the playoff twice. 18, certainly for the longer hitters, it's definitely a gettable second shot for them, but it's a very dangerous second shot because obviously left goes in the hazard. And then right, if you bail out, you leave yourself a pretty nasty trap shot to some of the pin positions. So it is a sort of tactical hole from the point of view of you have to be very aware of the pin positions. If you do bail out, you can leave yourself some pretty awkward pitch shots and bunker shots. It's a good hole, great finishing hole.
Now, were you aware that 2 weeks ago in Vegas you became a meme?
No.
So there is a meme going around now saying, find someone who looks at you the way that Graham McDowell looks at that team trophy. you have gained internet meme fame.
That's
I love it.
When you're a meme, that's a good time in your life. As long as it's a semi-positive meme.
Have you ever looked at anything more lovingly than that trophy? It was amazing because the smile and the joy on your face holding that team trophy and I asked Pete. I said, people, I'm interviewing Graham McDowell. Any questions for him? Now I expected questions about your major win. I expected questions about three people said. Did he take the trophy home with him? Has he still got it?
No, I had to give it back. I mean, the funny thing was, I wanted Brooks to have the trophy, but since it was my first time on a podium and a first time holding one of the LIV trophies, the boys made me hold it the whole time, So I was okay with that, I got to be honest. And I mean, moving into Team Smash this year was an exciting move for me. I felt like at this point in my career where I still feel like I'm good enough, but I need that X factor. I need that sort of motivation, that expectation, that pressure.
Well, people get motivated different ways, don't they?
Yeah.
You know, maybe in the cliques where that was, obviously there's no equity ownership in the cliques. It's a very different sort of beast in the way that is. But you're with Brooks, there's equity ownership. Mm-hmm. You've got the winner from last year. You've got that crucible of pressure. And there's that spurs you on.
For sure. I think the thing that people don't realize about Liv is how much the team dynamic is a huge part of our preparation. Mm-hmm. It's a huge part of everything that we do. Golf is such an individual sport. You know, I've played on tours around the world for the last 20 years, you know, representing myself, playing for myself. You just have your small network of people, your caddy, your coach, your family. But when you come out here on Live, you're part of something bigger. You're part of the team. And, you know, you prep together, you get, you know, you, the expectation levels are created among the four. And when you've got like a standout player like Brooks Koepka that you know is going to go and perform multiple weeks this year, Taylor Gooch won three times last year, Jason Cook racks it. Very decorated player, very good player. You know the expectation levels within Smash is that we want to be winning, you know, team trophies. We want to be competing every week. So, you know, that just brings an extra kind of bit of pressure. And to me, you know, as a guy that's been doing it for so long, the pressure focuses the mind. Pressure drives you to kind of get up in the morning and go try and get better. And, you know, you're showing up every week and, you know, you got to bring your A game to try and, you know, contribute to the team as well as playing well for yourself. I mean, obviously there's a lot of financial reward to play well individually on this tour. But, you know, the team, like, you know, talking about the last round of Vegas, for example, I was way more focused on the team stuff than I was on the individual stuff, even though I got to within two or three of the lead, I guess, with maybe four or five holes to go.
And is that partly also because, I think it's a fantastic move Liv have done to make four scores count.
I totally agree. And I mean, you know, coming from the cliques last year, we didn't really have that standout player like Brooks Koepka on our team. But, you know, as a four, we felt like we could potentially compete, you know, if four scores were counting. But, you know, it was obviously three from four. And it's less volatile and it's more about that low score rather than having four good scores. You need, you know, three from four. You need that one big score.
You get one guy go 7-8 under and around. It doesn't matter if you've got a goes three or four over.
That's what you need, you know. So you get that kind of like really, really top, top player on a team and he can really spur the rest of the team on. So I think four scores to count. It's an interesting dynamic. It's a lot of pressure on a Sunday. You know, you've got to go out there regardless of your place in the field. You've got a lot to play for within the team. And you can make a huge move. And that was fun. I mean, it was fun to play well. It was kind of exactly what I needed at this stage in the season, you know, to try and create some momentum within my own game. And obviously creating momentum within the team, which just keeps everyone going, keeps everyone motivated and working hard. And I think that Brooks certainly leads by example. You know, his work ethic is high level. You know, Taylor's a incredible competitor, as is Jason. And like I say, I couldn't be in a better place right now for me because, like I say, I feel like my game is still there. I just need that little bit of focus in my mind, that little mental fortitude that's potentially been missing. You know, I haven't played well at all the first two seasons in Liv. You know, I've been disappointed with
it. It's very honest to say that.
Yeah, no, you know, I've struggled. You know, I struggled when Liv was first created. You know, the negativity was hard. The noise was very hard. Last season, you know, I couldn't blame that. It was really just a lack of momentum, a lack of confidence and belief. And, you know, coming into this season, I was hoping that, you know, you don't rely on your teammates to bring you forward. You have to create your own belief and your own motivation. But I knew there was going to be a little bit of icing coming from the guys that I'm surrounded with. You know, with Brooks, you know, I want to play well for him and I want his choice to bring me on as a Smash player. I want that to be worth it for him, you know. So it's been great. It's been good. You know, it's early in the season, you know, and I feel like as the season kind of lays out in front of me, coming to Saudi, a place I've won here at Royal Greens, you know, and then we go to Miami where I've played well in the past. Back when it was a WGC. And then we go to Adelaide, which is a golf course which I like for me.
Hong Kong, that's next week.
Hong Kong. Yeah. I'm forgetting about Hong Kong. I mean, I love that golf course.
Yeah.
So, you know.
I think it's on, although like you can talk about Pine Valley and Augusta, and one of my bucket list courses for me has got to be Hong Kong Golf Club. It just looks super. Yeah.
It's cool. You know, I've gone there many, many times back when the European Tour used to play there pretty often in the UBS Hong Kong Open. I love the track. I was there in November. I think I finished 13th or 14th and got off to a slow start, but excited to go back there. I love the way the sort of first half of the live schedule kind of lays out for my game. And it's important for me to kind of, you know, make hay sort of during these first five, six events because they are great golf courses.
Have you had a chance to, obviously, we're going back to the UK this year, not to Centurion, going to JCB. You played JCB before?
I have not, no. So I'm excited to go and check that out.
Yeah, it's a phenomenal golf course. It's really challenging. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of length to it, but also a lot of tightness. It's punishing in every single way.
Well, absolutely. I mean, we do get to go to some cool new places on LIV, and I think that's what's the beauty of this tour is that, you know, it's a blank canvas.
Well, there we are. There's a great question for this come up from what you're saying there. You go all around the world. Would you like to see, is there any opportunity? Could it happen at LIV Ireland?
I think LIV Ireland is absolutely, you know, a possibility. I think a lot of things have to happen between now and an event in Ireland. But there's no country which is kind of off limits, really. You know, if there's a market, if there's a want,
and the Irish are underserved with professional golf tournaments. Really, if we're honest, they've been starved of it. Besides a couple, they really are starved of pro golf tournaments, aren't
sure.
they?
You know, obviously bringing the Open Championship back to Portrush in 2019 was special. You know, and aside from that, they have the Irish Open, which is a special event and one that, you know, I love a lot. But no doubt, I mean, I think just the whole UK and Ireland, they love golf. I love going there. I love playing in front of the fans. They're knowledgeable. They love the sport. They understand the sport. And I miss playing back there. You know, having only one opportunity to go to the UK and Ireland these last couple of seasons, it's been disappointing, you know, because I do like to go home. I haven't made it back to Portrush very often, you know, in the last few years just because of my schedule. And there's no doubt I would love to see more events up in that part of the world.
And with your diary and obviously having family and all that you do in your life, are you going to be looking at qualifying for the Open this year? Is that not on your schedule?
No, it is. I'm going to try and qualify for both the US Open and the Open Championships. I've done that the last couple of seasons. My US Open exemption ran out in 20. And I've tried to qualify every year since then. So I'll go to the US Open qualifier the Monday of our LIV Houston event, and then I'll go to...
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
And then the Open Championship qualifier for me is going to be on the Tuesday of IS Morocco, which is the week before Valderrama. So I'll fly in, qualify, haven't picked my venue yet, maybe West Lancs again, and then I'll fly to Morocco, play the IS Morocco, and then go to Valderrama, and then hopefully back for the Open. That's the plan.
And that sounds like a lot of golf, and... I know golfers never complain because you get to play golf for a living and it's a great thing to do. But visually, you look to be in great shape, and I saw you on the range hitting it really well. Have you been doing anything different with your conditioning and your health and fitness the last 2-3 years? Is that something you've been working on in a different way?
Yeah, no. I mean, there's no doubt. I think the season is lighter than it used to be. I used to be a 25 a year kind of guy, 28 a year. And now all of a sudden I'm only playing, I think I played 20 last year, you know, and I'm only scheduled to play about 17 or 18 this year. So it's taken me a little bit of time to adapt to that, you know, being able to practice better when I'm at home, prepare myself better for less events. I've kind of felt like I used to throw in the odd week that I might not have played just to get ready for, you know, runs of golf, you know, so I'd play my way into form. You don't really get the opportunity to do that on LIV.
You have
to be ready to go. This is more of a sprint format. I think, 72 holes versus 54 doesn't sound like a huge difference. But the mentality to me over 54 with no cut versus the standard 72 holes is a very different mentality. It's a much more aggressive, out of the gates, you have to play hard. There's no room for an average 18 holes.
You can't have a quiet front nine, can you?
You can't really afford to play averagely for nine holes. I mean, I felt like I've won 72 hole events around the world where I've had average days. On LIV, you can't really afford. You have to play three solid rounds of golf to win. And, to me, 72 holes, you used to have that first 36, right? You're trying to just get into the weekend in decent shape, and then you've got 36 holes to go. And
you can make up
a lot of ground. There's no room for kind of letting the leaders get away from you in this tour. And, people kind of laugh and say that this tour's an exhibition tour and that these guys don't care.
Yeah,
and
they're idiots. It's just ridiculous.
These guys are washed up and they're just taking the cash and they don't really care about the game anymore, which is quite the opposite. I mean, there's there's a lot of world-class players in this field. The standard continues to improve. It continues to get better. You walk along that range here as we get ready these next few days. I mean, these guys are playing hard, you know, and you've still got 10, 15, 20 guys in this field that feel like they can still win major championships, you know, and there's a huge amount of motivation out here, and these guys are competitors, and they play hard every week. So there's no foot off the gas. I mean, it's like, you know, it frustrates me when I read stuff about, you know, how little that they think we care out here. It's quite the opposite.
They've never, so for me, Graham, they're not saying it to me, they're saying it to you. So I understand that can be hurtful and just annoying. And it is hurtful because it's always deriding you. And look at the heroes of European golf, you, Poults, Westy, like Henrik. And like they're directing those comments the way of you four and a few others. But anyone who says that for me has never really spent time with competitive people. I don't care whether you are a pro golfer or whatever your profession is. If you played sport, you want to win. If it's tiddlywinks, Graham, I want to beat you. Mm-hmm. If it's throwing marbles at a wall, I want to beat you. Like you want to compete. And having spent time with a lot of you guys and spent time on the range, there is no one here who's just here to be here.
For sure.
Everyone's here to win.
No doubt. I mean, like you say, hurtful, annoying. It was hurtful in the beginning. You know, but then I had to kind of grow a little thicker skin because I realized that, you know, social media is pretty poisonous nowadays, and it's also not real.
There's a few good ones around, I promise. A few of us.
Yeah, no, for sure. Don't take that the wrong way. You know, I'm talking more just about people out there trying to jab you just for the sake of jabbing you, and you know, so now it is just kind of an annoying thing. It's like a fly kind of buzzing around my head that I just kind of have to swat away and get on with my job, because. You know, like you say, guys are competitors out here. And you'll take Ian Poulter, for example, who's a good friend of mine. You know, we live in the same community in Orlando. I'd say Ian's working harder right now than he ever has in his life because, you know, he's like me. He feels the end, but he feels the opportunity level that we have out here on LIV, both financially and both from a competitive point of view, beating Dustin Johnson, Brooks Koepka, Bryson DeChambeau, Cam Smith, John Rahm, having a chance to beat those guys any week. Is a great achievement in golf, you know.
I speak to Ian quite regularly, and we're talking the other day, and we're talking the range, and he was talking proudly about how he's put on like 6.5 pounds of lean muscle mass, mm-hmm. how he's got his club head speed here, he's hitting his arm, and Ian's like, I've never done this. Like, yeah. It's just like, he's almost like out here like you are to go, we're going to prove you really wrong.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, obviously the LIV schedule gives us a little bit more opportunity, like I mentioned earlier, about preparing a little differently, being more ready. And it gives us more time to work on our physicality. You know, I dropped 10 pounds in the off season, just trying to lean up a little bit.
That's when I said you were looking good. I didn't want to say too much.
And guys kind of want to, you know, guys like to feel strong. Guys like to feel lean. You know, for me, I like feeling lean and flexible. And, you know, so there's no doubt, like, I look at Ian and he's working maybe as hard as he ever has in his career. I feel the same way. And there's many guys feeling the same, you know, that we have a phenomenal opportunity in front of us right here. It is frustrating not having pathways to, say, the majors, pathways to things like the Ryder Cup. Those are kind of like traditional goals that I would have always had for myself starting into a new season. I've had to try to reset what I want to achieve because those pathways are now gone for me. So, U.S. Open qualifiers, just being the best I can be on LIV, you know, and really keeping an open mind as I move in to play, you know, Asian Tour, International Series events, you know, trying to, you know, like I say, resetting my goals, resetting what I feel like I'm capable of achieving and what I want to achieve, you know, because like I say, the traditional pathways for me have changed. Mm. So creating those new pathways and what I want to do and making sure that kind of gets me out of bed in the morning and keeps me fired up. And, you know, like I say, it's taken me longer than expected to do that. But as I move into this season with the new dynamic with the team and everything that's going on, I feel like my head's in a better place.
That's amazing to hear. And look, I think you've been very honest and candid about being hurt by it. And I think that's really good for people to hear because I think people don't realise their faceless words do have implications. But for a man who needs to hear this, there was a trending topic of G-Max back. So at Vegas, G-Max back was a big trending thing. And I think it made so many fans of LIV and of yourself happy to see that. And I'm grateful. I've only got a minute with you left before I have to give you back. So I want to just touch on Give Me Five.
Yeah.
Come on, 3/4 of length. Calif de Belay, you got trapped against the rail. How did you feel? Because it looked like it was either horse at one point.
Yeah, it was fun to be at Kempton on Saturday, watch the race. that was probably as fired up as I've been in a long time. You know, it's like, it's amazing when you've no control over something, you know, a sporting event that you can't control the outcome. Gimme Five has been exciting. You know, Brooks and I bought him together last summer, trained him with Harry Durham. Harry's had some great success in his young career.
He's Paul Nichols' nephew, isn't he?
Yeah, trained under Paul Nichols for 10 years. And Paul Nichols obviously knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
So Harry's been great. We've had a great experience.
And been very successful for young training, what he's done and what he's learned off his uncle and doing it on his own. So you're in a great place, the real up-and-coming stable.
Yeah, and obviously Gimme Five is a really cool horse. I mean, Calif de Brulee is you know, the next big thing. And for us to, I guess... Harry Cobden, who rode Calif de Brulee, was on Racing UK last night just talking about the fact that he thought he was going to blow us away coming down the stretch, and they couldn't believe that Gimme Five kept coming. So, you know, obviously talking our horse up a little bit, and, you know, we were disappointed to finish second, but, you know, against a horse of that pedigree and that class, I think we're excited for the future.
Have you got any idea what you're going to do? Because you're entered currently into the Boodles Juvenile Hurdle and the JCB Triumph Hurdle on Friday.
I don't think he's running at Cheltenham. I don't think he's going to be ready. Harry's obviously going to just monitor his progress the next week or so, because he felt like...
It's quite soon, isn't it?
Yeah. Gimme Five dumped it all out against Calif de Brulee down the stretch, and, you know, really was in a race.
Well, Calif de Brulee pulled out of the JCB yesterday. So Calif de Brulee was listed as an entrant and now isn't.
Yeah, well, we don't.
So it makes sense. If he's dumped out, then maybe you need to do the same.
We don't think we want to go to Cheltenham and race maybe slightly underprepared. I think we might.
In the wet up that hill.
Yeah, exactly. I'd love to go there. I'm actually going to be playing Macau that week, so I can't go to Cheltenham. So, you know, selfishly, I'm like,
I'll think of you. I'll send you a couple of photos.
Yeah, please do. I'm kind of glad that Gimme Five's not going to be ready for it, because never been to Cheltenham and really want to go. There's a big race in Ireland at Ferry House, the Monday of Miami, which is a couple of weeks after Cheltenham. I think that's our the next race we're looking at. So it's exciting. It's fun. I love horse racing. I love having a few quid on the ponies. And
Cheltenham's got a place in mine and my wife's heart. My wife and my late father-in-law have been annual members at Cheltenham since she was four, and she's now 43.
Got it.
And
you sound like you've got a bit of West Coast accent there. A bit of
West Coast, I like that. Yeah, there's some Bristol in there for sure.
I lived in Cardiff for a couple of years back in my young days. And Cheltenham's on the radar. In the future, I want to go, and obviously love to have, you know, one of our horses. I think we'll probably try and get a couple more with Harry eventually. And
brilliant,
Cheltenham would be a special place to go have a win there.
Yeah, it's a super place. I love it. I'll be honest, I find the Friday a bit much, the Gold Cup day a bit much. It's like, it feels like there's 4,500 people in there, not the 55-60.
I know. AP McCoy was actually with us at Kempton, and we were just talking about what it's like coming up the hill there, you know, with, you know, 100,000 mad screaming Irishmen drinking Guinness that on your horse, and you're crossing the line as a winner.
Yeah.
It's a cool, I'd imagine it's a pretty cool feeling, cool experience.
Look, Graham, thank you so much. Everybody, we are so lucky at Golf Lovers United to get access to the players at LIV. So thank you again to everyone at LIV that helps enable us to speak with people. Graham, thank you for your time. It's been an absolute pleasure.
You got it. No, nice talking. Thanks.